Jesus said to his disciples, "But of that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but the Father alone. For as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. In those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the ark. They did not know until the flood came and carried them all away. So will it also be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be out in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one will be left. Therefore, stay awake. For you do not know on which day your Lord will come. Be sure of this. If the master of the house had known the hour of night when the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and not let his house be broken into. So too, you also must be prepared, for at an hour you do not expect, the Son of Man will come." Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Thank you. We tend to forget that we begin our new year the first Sunday of Advent. And everyone says, "Father Phil, why do we do that?" I say, "Because we like to be different." And we do a good job at being different, don't we? So, yes, we do begin our liturgical new year. And as we begin a new year, we embark on a different gospel. Last year was the gospel of... good job, Gospel of Luke. Kathy and Liz, they're not here again this week. That's 2 weeks in a row. I have to mark them as absent. Anyway, Kathy and Liz were tired of Luke. They said, "We're tired of Luke. We got Luke down. We need somebody." So this year, we start on Matthew. Now, obviously, remember that each gospel has a different agenda, okay? And so Matthew's agenda is rather different than Luke's agenda. Remember, Luke's agenda, I always say the gospels are like, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, whatever. So remember, Luke was the MSNBC because his agenda was to bring glad tidings to the poor, liberty to captives, to let the oppressed go free, to bring sight to the blind, announce a year of favor from the Lord. They all know that, but I didn't need to impress you. Okay, so they know that by heart. But in Matthew's gospel, the mission of Jesus is rather different. In Matthew's gospel, he has come not to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. So you kind of can even hear with their agenda how Luke is MSNBC and Matthew is kind of Fox. It's all about the law and following the law. So it depends where you come from. Okay, and so we are also mindful that Luke wrote to a Gentile audience and Matthew writes to a Jewish audience. And so therefore, when we hear Matthew's gospel, his community is Jewish and he refers to very Jewish things. Now, as we said, this is New Year, and you might be saying to yourself, "Well, if this is New Year, these readings don't sound very much like new beginnings or anything new, and they really don't even sound much like having anything to do with Christmas. So why in the heck are we reading readings that come from the end of Matthew's gospel, not the beginning, and doesn't sound very Christmassy to me, because it's talking about the end times?" Well, those of you who have been coming here for a while are sick and tired of hearing about this, but we have some new people like you. Where are you from?
Jupiter, Florida.
Jupiter. Okay, you're just visiting? Okay. Well, that's your mom. We love your mom. That's Andy. Okay, well, we're glad you're here from Jupiter. So, you see, at Jupiter, you'd say, "Why are we wearing these end time things and this new beginnings and new year and new everything?" Well, the reason is because at Christmas, we celebrate three things, right? We celebrate shopping, shopping, and shopping. Location, location, location. No, we don't celebrate shopping. Why not? We want to celebrate shopping. No, we don't celebrate shopping. So the first thing that we celebrate, and the most important, the first thing we celebrate is the incarnation of God, okay? Now, I know when we were in third grade, we learned it was Jesus' birthday. Birthday, yeah, birthday, okay. And that is one way of looking at it when you're in third grade, that it's Jesus' 2016th birthday. And the problem with saying it's his birthday, one year at Christmas Eve, I actually explained to them that we don't know when Christ was born, that we chose December 25th because the light gets longer and Jesus is the light of the world, and there was the pagan feast of Apollo. And so I explained that one year at Christmas Eve. Oh my gosh, did I bust bubbles? They were traumatized. Years ago, I actually used to even have, for the little kids, a happy birthday Jesus mass for like four-year-olds and less. But what happened was the majority of people there were like 60 and 80-year-olds, and they're still thinking of December 25th as Jesus' birthday. Well, it's not. That's not. We celebrate that theological concept and reality. God took on flesh and became one with us. The incarnation of God. That's a lot more powerful than happy birthday, Jesus, right? Okay, it's more, anyway, it's got a whole different meaning. So we, first of all, we celebrate the incarnation of God, and we celebrate that on December 25th. Okay, the second thing we celebrate is that each of us here, hopefully, has had in their life an experience of God through Christ. That at some point in your life, it was no longer learning about Jesus, but rather it was having a relationship with Jesus, okay? Now, for some people, that happened when they went on retreat, or some people in a marriage encounter, Curcio, or Christ Renews His Parish, some kind of thing like that, where they have an encounter with God, that it becomes more than just about God. Some people actually have experience of God at Mass, which I think really is where it's supposed to happen, but who am I? What do I know? But anyway, but we have people who come to church and something happens, right? Bob, you were one of those people. You came to Mass and something happened, and he had an encounter with the living God. And when you encounter God, your life is changed. Now, there's no specific date that that happens. It's no specific year. It's whenever that happens in your life. Some people, sadly, they actually leave the Catholic Church and encounter God. And then they come back and they're sometimes mad. I was a Catholic for 18 years and I never encountered Jesus in the Catholic Church. But anyway, but eventually they encounter, where, you know, we laid the groundwork, folks. But anyway, eventually they encounter Christ, but it's on God's time, not our time. And it can happen in a bazillion different ways that we encounter Christ, right? And so basically, whenever that encounter of Christ that you had in your life, we're going to all celebrate our encounter with Christ at Christmas, okay? So Christ, incarnation of God, Christ comes into our life. And the third thing we celebrate is that Christ will come again. What you talking about? I thought Jesus said, I am with you always. I thought Jesus said, when two or you or more are gathered in my name, I am present. I thought Jesus said he's always with us. So which is it? Is he here or is he coming again? And that's called a paradox, okay? And we Christians have lots of paradox, don't we? Because we say Mary is virgin and mother. We say Jesus is God and man. We have tons of paradox. Because the mystery of God is beyond our human understandings. So yes, Jesus is here, and yes, Jesus will come again. And so we live in that paradox of the already and not yet. I know, it's very complicated to be a person of faith. That's why it's not good to teach kids religion. But anyway, it's very complicated to be people of faith. The already and the not yet. And so we celebrate all three of those. Now, at Our Lady of Lourdes, we always celebrate all three, but we do try to emphasize one over the other two on a three-year basis. So last year, we emphasized the second coming. We had angels and trumpets and images of the second coming. But this year, we're going to go, it's our year where we celebrate the incarnation of God. And so we'll be using very earthy symbols. We'll be using a baby Jesus, and we'll have sheep. We got real sheep coming. We got baby goats coming, baby sheep coming. We're going to do real earthy things to say that God became flesh. Sheep are pretty fleshy, so especially when you eat them. But anyway, so we got sheep and goats, and going to use images of Christ, God becoming one with us. Okay, and so recognizing that we always celebrate those three things, then we understand that today's gospel is actually completely about Christmas, but it's about his second coming. Now, mindful that Matthew writes to a Jewish audience, we hear in our first reading the Jewish understanding of the end time, and we hear that understanding to say that Jerusalem, the holy city, the place of the temple, is the place where we encounter God. Remember, in the temple, Jewish people encounter God in the temple. John says we encounter God in Jesus. But anyway, in Judaism, we encounter God in the temple. That will be on the highest of mountains, and it'll be in the center of all of humanity. And all the nations will recognize the centrality and the importance of Jerusalem as the place of encountering God. And we hear that all the nations of the world will live in peace. That will be no more war. In fact, they will beat their swords into plowshares as that powerful image of a world that needs no more weapons, but rather a world of peace. And so that is the vision that Matthew is writing into about the second coming of Jesus. Now, we also have to be mindful that the first Christians were expecting Jesus to come right away, okay? They were like, you know, he's supposed to come back like any day now. And the fact that he didn't come was kind of problematic. Now, we call that the delay of the parousia. I teach them big words here, Nancy. Yeah, it's a Greek word. It means second coming. So, Patrick, there'll be a quiz. Parousia, okay? It's not Perugia, it's parousia, okay? It's spelled like Perugia, but it's not. It's parousia, which means the second coming. So we learn big words because it's part of our faith. So we learn that the second coming they were expecting to happen, it was the delay of the parousia. And so the way the gospel writers try to deal with this, because we don't want people to say, oh, you were wrong. He didn't come back right away. If you're wrong about that, you're probably wrong about everything. That's how we humans tend to think. If you're wrong about one thing, you're wrong about everything. Well, so therefore, they wrote into their gospels how to deal with the delay in his coming, the already and the not yet. And so we hear now Matthew deal with that, and we have this whole little chapter before today's reading, which is called apocalyptic writing, which is the special kind of writing that deals with the cosmic end of times. Eschatology, big word. Okay, so we do apocalyptic writing, and we get to today where he says, but no one, so they say, well, when is it going to happen? When is the end coming? When is he coming back? And he says, no one knows. Not the angels, not the Son, but only the Father knows. So stop worrying about when the end is coming. Stop worrying about when you die. The people most afraid to die are the ones who are afraid to really live, but we won't go there today. Okay, so don't be worried. Now, we know that there are religions that started based on the fact that they said, oh, well, the end is coming in 1865, and then when it didn't come, well, then it's gonna come in 1914. And then when it didn't come, they just keep moving. And now some years, this year is not too bad, but some years at this time of year, there's like, oh, these things like, you know, the Mayan calendar ends, or it's the end of the world, or the, what was that thing in 2000, the Y2K, the end is, yeah, it's here, the sky is falling, the end is there. And so some years is more than others where we hear all this fury about it being the end of the world, and the end time has begun. And basically, we as Catholics say, like, you know what, we don't know when, we don't know how, we don't even have a clue what that's going to be like. So let's just not worry about it, but rather, how do we live while we are in expectation? Hence the word Advent. Okay, so how do we live? So Matthew gives us this example, which his community is familiar with, Noah, right? Now, it's very interesting, this example he gives about Noah, because he doesn't say what we would probably expect, that during the days of Noah, people were out fornicating and promiscuity and being dreadful, rotten, evil people until the flood came. Isn't that what he says, right? But that's the story, you know, if you're going to, it's a story. It's not history. It's a story. So, but in the story, that's how we know the story, right? All these terrible things are happening. He's going to save Noah because he's not rotten and everybody else is rotten. But that's not what Matthew points out. He just says they were busy. They were busy eating and they were busy drinking and they were busy getting married and being given in marriage. They were busy about doing all the normal things that normal people do, and they were busy, but they were unaware. Ah, that's what he's saying, is they were unaware. Okay, so he uses that and he says, well, it's going to be the same way when Jesus comes, so the second coming, the coming of the Son of Man. And he says, there'll be two men working in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. There'll be two women grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one will be left. You see, they're both doing what you do. It's not like, oh, one man will be in church praying all the time and the other man will be working in the field, and the one in the church praying all the time, he gets taken and the one working in the field gets left behind. No, they're both doing the same thing. They're both working in the field. They're both, women are at the grinding at the mill. They're doing what they do. So why is one taken and one left? One is aware. Stay awake. He then gives the example, which we're really good at, about a thief coming to your house at night, and you want to be awake when the thief comes because you won't let. So that's why we had got lights. They go on automatically if there's a motion, or we have alarms that go off just to wake you up if, you know, we want to be awake when the thief comes, so we can like lock the door or call the police or do whatever you do when the thief is coming in the night. But it's about being awake and being aware. Now, as you know, every Sunday afternoon, I know you think I just sleep, which I would like to do, but I don't. I always prepare for next week. So I live with the readings all week long. So last Sunday, I heard these readings, you know, one will be taken and one will be left. Barbara will be taken and Mike will be left. So one will be taken and one will be left. And I, you know, this, it just, those words just kept all week long. One will be taken and one will be left. One will be taken and one will be left. And, you know, what are we going to do with this? So on Thursday, on Thanksgiving, now I told everybody not to discuss politics. So I always say, do as I say, not as I do. But anyway, so we were actually pretty good. We got together with the family. But I have two nieces. I have Cindy, who's a teacher, and Stephanie, who's a dentist. One will be taken and one will be left. One will be taken and one will be left. Well, I did not engage in the conversation, but they had a conversation. The last mess, they gave me some insight into it, actually. But anyway, they had a conversation, and it started off, I think, rather innocently. Somehow or another, we got onto this whole, you know, the new political correctness. There's a whole new political correct thing going on where, you know, you gotta like, shove Christmas down everyone's throat because it's not good to say happy holidays. I grew up in Brooklyn. We had holidays, Jewish holidays. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. We loved that, right? We had holidays, right? Everybody had holidays. We wished each other happy holidays. It wasn't a big drama. It's what we did. And we liked even snow holidays. We liked snow holidays. So whatever holidays, we wished everybody a happy holiday because we had Jews, we had Muslims, we had God knows what they were. We had all kinds of people, but we all had holidays. And so that was not a big deal. But now the new political correct thing to say is you got to say Merry Christmas. And we gotta make you say Merry Christmas because I believe in Jesus, because Christmas has to do with shopping, and we all gotta go shopping. So Merry Christmas and buy more stuff. So anyway, and so they were talking. It was kind of an innocent conversation. And when I didn't get involved, but one said, you know, well, you know, what's wrong with saying happy holidays? Merry Christmas. Well, gotta keep Christ in Christmas, like whatever that means. I want to say keep Mass in Christmas. What a concept. I want to say wish me a prayerful Advent, because Christmas doesn't start till December 25th, so we got a whole month of Advent. Maybe say, have a prayerful Advent. What an idea. Oh my goodness gracious. Anyway, so we started. So it was all pretty innocent. It was kind of cute and it was whatever. It was like, whatever. But the conversation then, I think, kind of went south because they started talking about this football player guy, Colin. Yeah, that is. I don't know his name. I'm not a football person. So they started talking about him, and then they said, I guess he knelt during the national anthem, which one who doesn't know anything would think that that was like awesome because like we kneel at the Eucharist. No, that's not what it, whatever. It wasn't not a good thing to kneel, even though we kneel because that's what we do as a sign of whatever. But anyway, so the whole thing, I guess he knelt as a sign that he was a use of his freedom of speech against the way races are treated or black people are treated, whatever the heck it is. And so one niece said, well, it was kind of offensive, but, you know, I want to hear what this guy was saying, and, you know, we got to be open, and blah, blah, blah. So it was very nice, it was very loving, it was very compassionate. And the other niece, now the other niece could have said, well, you know what, that guy was on company time, and if you work for me, you do what I say, and you know, so in other words, if Nelson wants to, like, lie on the floor during Mass, I'll say, Nelson, when you work for me, you're on the clock, you don't lie on the floor during Mass. Now, you go to another church, have at it. Go lie on the floor. I don't care what you do at another church. But when you're on my clock, you don't be lying on the floor. So you do what you gotta do. But the conversation didn't go that way. And at the last Mass, she said, that's because she's Italian. So what my niece Stephanie said was, well, if he doesn't like the country, he should just leave. So she had an Italian moment. That's what at the last Mass, they brought light to the subject and said, well, that was an Italian moment, Father. I'm like, yeah, she had that Italian moment where you don't like this country, just leave. But it was just anger, and it was venom, and it was like somebody like attacked her or whatever, and it was just so ugly. And what she didn't realize, if you think about what she was, but what she was saying is, if you don't like the way our country is, you need to leave the country. Well, in our country, we have free speech. So if you don't like that we have free speech, you should leave the country. I mean, the reasoning behind her reaction was absolutely insane. You don't like the country, then leave. Well, we have freedom of speech. You don't like that we have freedom of speech, then you need to be the one to leave. But anyway, the freedom of speech thing is going to come more and more into play, folks. Be aware, because, people want to take away freedom of speech. I remember, this is really scary, but back when we went to war with Iraq, naturally, you wouldn't expect the priest to say, yeah, let's kill the boogers. No, I preached what the Pope said. This is an unjust war and we are not to go. People actually said, Father Phil, if you don't like that we're going to war, you need to leave. I'm like, huh? What you talking about? That's crazy talk. That's just not. Anyway, so I have no issue about this Colin guy, and I could care less about football, and I don't even know his name, but he came up as a discussion. But when I looked at this and I said to myself, do I want to be more like Cindy, who was more compassionate and understanding and open, or do I want to be more like Stephanie, who at this day had an Italian moment? We call those episodes. Well, no, episodes are, that's an Italian moment to an extreme. But anyway, so she had an Italian moment. And I thought to myself, one will be taken and one will be left. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? I'd rather be like Cindy. I'd like to be filled more with compassion and understanding and less defensive and filled with love. And I want to be all those wonderful things rather than getting all squinty-faced and tight and clenching your fists and being filled with anger and resentment and feeling so attacked. You know, you want to stand, you stand. You want to sit, you sit. That's what America's about. You know, if you don't like gay marriage, don't get gay married. I mean, whatever. So it is what it is. That's what America makes America who we are, is that we get the freedom to do what we want to do. So as I thought about it, I said to myself, well, what makes the difference is that awareness, being awake. Now, I'll admit, none of us wants to really wake up, right? Well, okay, just me. because I have to face all of you. But anyway, so we want to stay in bed. We want to pull the covers over our head nice and high. We want to stay in bed. I don't want to wake up. I don't want to change. I don't want to see things any different. And it's part of my job is always to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. So part of my job is to always try to wake you up. And you don't like to be awake, right? You don't like to be woken up because, you know, I'll even make you aware of your body language, right? See, at church here, we're not allowed to sit like this. Because I tell them, how would you like it if I sat up there like this? You'd all talk about me. Did you see that priest? He was so angry. He had his arms folded the whole time. He was closed. You wouldn't like that very much at all. I was like, but anyway, so I try to say, you know, your body language says I'm angry, I'm closed, I'm afraid, whatever. Be open. Now I understand some people are new here, and I don't blame you. I'd be like this too, because Father Phil's gonna call on me or pick on me or call me out. So I get it. It's okay, you know, for visitors, but our regular people, they know better because, you know, but it's that awareness, becoming more and more aware. I teach them to be aware of what we say, because we say all kinds of crazy stuff, and to be aware of what our body's language is. So being aware. Now, we talked a few weeks ago about prayer, and I was thinking that prayer is a great way for us to increase our awareness. And we talked about a few weeks ago many kinds of prayer. So working against capital punishment is a prayer, okay? Working with the poor and the hungry is prayer. Visiting the sick is prayer. Taking care of your grandchild is prayer, okay? There's a lot of prayer going on. And I guarantee you, when you do those things, you grow in awareness. Am I right, Nancy? As you work with, you know, getting rid of capital, you grow in awareness. When you feed the hungry, you grow in awareness. When you try to find homeless shelter happening, you grow in awareness. When you work with people, when you feed the hungry, you clothe the naked, you visit the sick, you grow in awareness. And that is awesome because that's what prayer is about. If you don't do anything, well, you're not going to grow in awareness, so that's just the way it is. You're going to stay narrow and closed and in your little world, in your little box, and it's what happens. Well, we also can grow in awareness by private prayer, okay? And private prayer. Now, everybody's got different private prayer. Some people love the rosary. They pray the rosary all day long, and it works for them. Some people like prayer books. We have Larry. He's not here right now, but Larry's got a prayer book, and he loves his prayer book. And it's where, you know, some people like sitting at exposition and sitting in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Some people like charismatic prayer. So there's all different kinds of prayer that people like. And in that prayer, they grow, hopefully, in awareness. Well, there's many kinds of private prayer, and people always say to me, well, Father Phil, I've been doing this for a long time. Can you teach me a new way to pray? We're all got our own thing, so it's really hard to teach somebody. But at the same time, we decided in our parish to have prayer school. And so Fridays of Advent, we're going to have prayer school at 6:30, and we're going to experience Lectio Divina. You know what that is, right? Sacred reading. Because one of our ways to grow in awareness is to become willing to hear God speak. You see, most of us grew up with prayer meant telling God what to do. Well, yeah, that's when you're fifth grade. But now we're adults, and we're going to learn to listen to God speak to us. And so in Lectio Divina, it's sacred reading. We're going to use scripture, and we're going to learn how to allow God to speak to us through the scriptures. And so Friday nights of Advent at 6:30, we're going to have Lectio Divina, probably in the chapel, but if there's so many, we'll gladly move into the church. We're hopeful. It is what it is. But it's your choice. But also, some people say, well, Father Phil, I can't come out at night because it's dark and I can't drive in the dark and that's a good where I work, whatever. So we also are going to have prayer school on Thursday afternoons at 4 o'clock. So you'll be done before it gets dark. And so we have prayer school coming. And so I think it's really important as we live in the already and the not yet, as we try to live in a state of being awake and aware, that we perhaps during Advent have a prayerful Advent, to recognize that preparing for Christmas is not just about where we're going to buy the fish for Christmas Eve or where we're going to buy the special stuff for the strufula for Christmas Day or where we're going to, it's not just all about eating, although sort of, but it's not all about shopping, it's not all about presents, it's not all about getting the right food to have the celebration, but it's about preparing our spiritual lives for the incarnation of God. And so prayer can once again be our focus. Remember, one will be taken, one will be left. Which one are you?